You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Haleiwa. Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll consider the bane of gardeners everywhere, nematodes. Discover the uses for fragrant lemongrass and share an opportunity to be the change we want to see in our world. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, Kauai Marine and Mower, 808 Equipment Rental, and Aya's Garden. Aloha, Robin.
Aloha, Paul. How are you today?
Great to be back in the garden on the farm with you.
Indeed.
As we gaze out at our beautiful crops growing and wanting to share information with our community about how we can all be growing better together. We're going to start the show, as we always do, with a celestial session, looking to the heavens above for inspiration and guidance on planting and harvesting and all manners of working with plants. We will start with the Hawaiian moon phase, and thanks to the Hanalei Watershed Hui calendar, today's Hawaiian moon is La'au Pau. La'au Pau rose on Kauai at 11:18 p.m. last night, reached its transit or highest point in the sky at 5:19 this morning, and set at 11:16 a.m. this morning. 63% of the moon's face was illuminated. And the last quarter moon is happening tomorrow, Thursday, at 7:19 p.m. Planting recommendations for La'au Pau are planting mai'a, ulu, and other trees. It's also optimal for making and administering herbal medicine.
Awesome. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, today and tomorrow the moon will be in Virgo, an earth sign, making it good to work with our root-type plants. Friday and Saturday, the moon will be in Libra, which is an air sign, making it a good time to work with our flowering plants. And Sunday, Monday, the moon will be in Scorpio, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants. And then again on Tuesday, the moon will move into Sagittarius, a fire sign, making it a great time to work with our fruiting plants.
Fantastic. And there are a couple of small blockout areas, or it's just all golden? What can you tell? We're pulling out the calendar and having a look.
Yeah, there's a few times of day, but as it turns out with our translation of time, they're not going to affect us. They'll be happening in the middle of the night when most of us won't be gardening.
Perfect.
By the looks of it.
That according to the Maria Thun Biodynamic Calendar from 2014. So thanks to the fine people who put that together for us. And we're going to look at some notable news, things that are happening on the scene here nationally as well as in Hawaii, affecting us gardeners and farmers. And the first story we're going to look at is a honeybee shortage threatening crop pollination in Europe. This story from BBC News. New research shows half of all European countries don't have enough honeybees to pollinate their crops. In fact, the United Kingdom only has about 25% of what's needed. And part of the reason for that is said to be a boom in biofuels. They're growing a lot of oilseed rape, sunflowers, and soybeans. And those are the big biofuel crops, and that's all being driven by legislation that is demanding that a certain amount of biofuel be put into petrol, basically. The UK population's decline is, as it is here in Hawaii and across the world, due to pesticide use and disease. And, of course, some of those diseases are happening because of the pressure from pesticide use.
Exactly. And monocropping, we know, is just never really beneficial to the other organisms out there.
That's right. And we ask so much from our bees, we need to take care of them. So basically, wild pollinators are playing a part as well, and they're an important but poorly understood factor in the pollination of these crops. So anything we can do, I know the European Union is working on eliminating nicotinoids, which are one of the main pesticide threats to bees, but here in America, they're still legal and causing a lot of mayhem. So hopefully we can take care of our bees better in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the Hawaii front, there's a state initiative to replant our roadsides with native plants. It's happening right now on Oahu. And the first site is the intersection of the Highway H1 and University Avenue. They're planting the roadsides there with common dryland plants with a focus on seed production so they can continue to reintroduce natives to more areas along the roadsides, which is way cool. It's a collaboration between the Hawaii Department of Transportation and University of Hawaii at Manoa. And right on.
Yeah, I saw the video on KITV website, and really fun to see this idea that I think here on Kauai we've had for years as we've looked at similar waste areas and think, oh my goodness, native plants should be growing everywhere, and how about these unused places that people would see them and appreciate them as they're going to and from their work. So hopefully they will continue to succeed. Interesting to see which plants they're using. I noticed they're using the uhaloa, which is a plant that we may cover in the medicine chest coming up on a future program, valuable medicinal plant, as well as being a good indigenous plant for dry areas, xeriscape kind plant. So thanks to University of Hawaii for leading the charge in so many ways for agriculture and native plant conservation.
Yeah, indeed.
Today on Be the Change, we're going to give folks an opportunity to learn about an initiative to support labeling of GE, or genetically engineered food. And this is an initiative being rolled out by the Center for Food Safety. They've given it the title, Don't Let the Big Food Lobby Block State Labeling. Basically, what's going on is the Grocery Manufacturers Association is proposing a federal voluntary labeling bill that would block states from passing meaningful mandatory labeling bills, redefine genetically engineered food as safe, and even allow genetically engineered foods to be labeled as natural. Can you believe it?
Oh my gosh.
What is not natural in this world? The introduction of this bill would only serve to undermine state and federal legislation meant to grant consumers the right to know and avoid genetically engineered food, the statement says. Here's an opportunity to tell Congress to oppose this bill that would block state genetically engineered food labeling, which we have tried hard to do in Hawaii, and I imagine that this legislative season there'll be another attempt to have labeling for Hawaii. Instead, support a Boxer DeFazio bill to label genetically engineered food, I believe, on the federal level. So if this interests you and you'd like to be the change and get involved, you can go to centerforfoodsafety.org and look for the Take Action tab there on the website, and you'll find that this is one of the initiatives that you can get involved in.
Sounds great.
So this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. Coming up in this hour, nematode control and solarization specialist Dr. Kunhui Wang from the University of Hawaii will join us. And right now it's time to step into the kitchen garden.
Yes, and in the kitchen garden, always growing lemongrass. Lemongrass is super fragrant, extremely easy to grow. There's actually at least 13 different varieties of lemongrass, including true citronella. Citronella is usually considered to be a geranium plant, but it actually is not a geranium plant. Geraniums have been bred in so many ways to carry the scent of many, many different things, and they are quite lovely.
And it's one of those examples of about how you really can't depend on a common name, because citronella is actually a valid common name for the rose geranium here in Hawaii, but is misleading because the true citronella is not related botanically at all. It is indeed a grass.
A grass high in oils. So the leaves are used in curries, soups, as a tea, but the oil of lemongrass is actually an insecticide and a preservative used for manuscript collections around the world. Some of the oldest libraries that tend to be in tropical areas, such as India, mm-hmm. have had really great success using lemongrass oil to preserve the texts so that small unseen mites don't eat the paper right out from under them.
I imagine that would be very useful in herbariums or libraries of dried plant specimens in areas where, yeah, the mites come on, and even fungi and other things could be attacking those valuable specimens as well.
Even more exciting, lemongrass oil is also used as a honeybee attractant. Apparently, the molecule is designed so closely to honeybee pheromones that often you can catch a swarm by using lemongrass as a lurer. How's that?
Very nice.
Very cool. So for all of our entrepreneurial young beekeepers out there, and you might be looking for some extra bees to add into your hives, and you hear of one in the neighborhood, you might have a little leg up there. Yeah. Try a little lemongrass oil.
How about lemongrass as an erosion control measure, too? We've planted it there at the Kalihiwai Food Forest, and it seems to have created a very dense stand that is really standing up to the vetiver and seeming to fill that same sort of a niche. Perhaps the roots are not as deep as vetiver, but at least looking at the top of the soil, it seems that it would be a very good filter strip. And I certainly know people use it as a weed barrier at the edge of their gardens as well.
Indeed. It gets so thick. And I do like to go in and cut them back occasionally. Turns out the leaves make great mulch as well and keep the brown and dead material kind of fished out of there. Because I've seen old plants that kind of just get a little overwhelmed with all their old material. So
yes.
They actually become compost plants in that way as well.
Indeed. It seems that there are types in Hawaii that go to seed and others that do not. Which one do you have, or how would you describe the variety that you're growing?
The variety I'm growing, it's very hard to tell by descriptions on the internet, you know, which one it is that I have. It has tried to go to seed, and that's actually another reason why I like to keep them cut back. It keeps them kind of in their vegetative growth.
Yes.
I'm not necessarily interested in collecting a whole lot of lemongrass seed, and they're so easy to propagate vegetatively that just as well to keep them groomed.
Certainly. And it could well be that with something that produces both vegetatively like lemongrass as well as by seed, that perhaps the one that you received is more likely to be a cultivar that has been vegetatively propagated. And if you save seed and grow it from seed, that you may actually wind up with a variety that could not have the beneficial essential oil characteristics of the one that you received. Of course, it could be better.
It could be better. That's always the thing with seeds, isn't it? It's nice to allow the plant its evolutionary right, almost, to drop some seeds even itself.
Truly.
And let them grow, even if we decide not to assist.
Indeed. So how about using it? Once you've plucked this out of your kitchen garden and it's heading for your kitchen, then how do you utilize it, Robin?
My favorite thing is tea. I just think lemongrass tea is just so delicious. And you can use the tips of the grass. You don't even need to use the bulbs of the plant. So when I cut them back, generally, I'll take my scissors to it and snip up a whole bunch, send it off as gifts for people. They really enjoy it. But lemongrass and mint is an excellent combination for a tea, and I'd say that's the most common way that I use an amount of it. Mm-hmm. Here and there in a curry is pretty good, too. But I haven't even considered getting some of the oil out myself, although there are so many great plants we're growing with essential oils, patchouli, and that we really could have a small business here of homegrown herbal essences.
Truly. And I believe that the Grimpus farm in Kapahi is working on that sort of thing. Whether or not they're working with lemongrass, I don't know, but they certainly are working with vetiver and our rose geranium that we mentioned earlier and a variety of other gingers that they've grown at their farm for a couple of decades now. So looking forward to having a discussion with them on an upcoming show as well.
Excellent.
And then as far as that bulb goes, Robin, you mentioned that you don't really need to harvest that part of the lemongrass for tea, yet it seems that when I get a Thai soup or other Asian-inspired dishes, that it's actually that sort of white base of the stem that is utilized. And is that something you resort to if you're going to do a stir-fry curry or something?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They're so beautiful to look at. And I believe that the essence is concentrated there in that bulb. So if you really want some flavor, it's a great way to go.
Cool. Thanks for taking us to your kitchen garden today. You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Paul and Robin. And right now we are joined by a special guest, Dr. Kunhui Wang. Dr. Wang is assistant professor at the Department of Plant and Environmental Protection Sciences at the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources at the University of Hawaii, where she works on sustainable pest management research on food crop production. She specializes in nematode and soil health management and is involved in a wide spectrum of research projects that aim to increase beneficial organisms in agroecosystems while reducing pesticide use. And it's really exciting to have you on the show today, Kunhui. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So grateful for all the sustainable and alternative agriculture research that you're doing in the Hawaiian Islands.
Thank you.
How did we get so fortunate as to have you at the University of Hawaii? How did you arrive here?
Well, I actually joined the university when I was in graduate school, so I actually got my master and PhD program from University of Hawaii. And I'm always interested in agriculture production. And so when I was offered an opportunity to study about nematode control when I was doing my graduate school, and I just like it, and I just continue on.
Fantastic. Well, as we know, our gardeners and farmers know, nematodes are such an important consideration when it comes to healthy crop management. And so today we are following along with our focus that we started a couple of weeks ago on the ginger family, Zingiberaceae, and knowing that nematodes are a major limiting factor in those crop production areas. Do you work with any ginger farmers?
Not with ginger farmers, yeah. I work with some sweet potato farmers, pineapple farmers, that lots of them are sharing similar type of nematode pest problem in ginger.
Yes, indeed. And so had a look at some of the papers that you've done, and it's really wonderful to know that there are actually complementary strategies that can be used. And can you tell us about some of them?
Yeah. So I've been always interested in non-chemical approach for nematode control, and a lot of it started from my graduate school. I'm fascinated by natural compound that produced by different type of cover crop. And there are also natural enemies of nematode pests that are always present in our soil. Unless we disturb the soil ecosystem, they are there that can keep nematode in check. So, cover crop is some of my main interests to introduce as a way to keep the plant parasitic nematode under control.
And there are many different kinds of cover crops that, or at least a handful of cover crops that have that anti-nematode action to them that I know people are using here on Kauai. Maybe we could start with sun hemp.
Sure. Yeah, so we call, not all cover crops are able to keep nematode pests under control, but those that can produce allelopathic compound, which is like a toxic compound produced by one organism to suppress another. Those cover crops, sun hemp or Crotalaria gentia is one of the best examples that is very suitable for growing in tropical area like in Hawaii. And so there's a specific variety that was selected by USDA here in Molokai. It's called Tropic Sun. It had been known to be producing nematicidal compound that is suppressing plant parasitic nematodes such as root knot, reniform nematode, and lesion nematode. So many plant parasitic nematodes can be suppressed by sun hemp.
Wow, is that variety seed available here in the islands for farmers to be able to purchase?
Yeah, there were at least two companies here that produce sun hemp seeds for sale. One of them is Oahu RCND in Oahu. And so seed are available, and I think they're still about $3 per pound. The other company that I know of is in Molokai. I think it's called Molokai Sun Hemp Seed Company. So they are both selling sun hemp seed for local use.
Great, and that Molokai company is actually growing the seed.
Yeah,
in
both
Hawaii,
of them
yes.
are growing seed in Hawaii.
Fantastic.
And are they growing it organically?
Basically, you don't have to put any fertilizer, and I don't think the farmers will spray any chemicals to protect the sun hemp from pests, because it's not really an edible crop that you need to consume. Mainly, if they can get the seed to grow in production, so they don't use any chemical. Probably, like, you can call it a low-input farming system.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it. So I was reading in one of your papers that it's actually the incorporation of the sun hemp during its vegetative growth that reduces the nematode population. So it's not, if I understand correctly, it's not a root exudate while the plant is growing, but rather it's the above ground portion of the plant incorporated into the soil that actually controls the nematode. Is that correct?
Crotalaria or sun hemp as a as a cover crop to control plant parasitic nematodes. Sun hemp is more effective for nematode control if it is incorporated into the soil. The reason is just by growing sun hemp itself, it does release some toxicity from the root system, but it is actually a poor host for the plant parasitic nematode like root knot. So root knot can infect the root and keep some reproduction going on, but not a very good host. But the leaves is the one that is contain the most allelopathic compound. So if you incorporate the leaves into the soil, that will kill more plant parasitic nematodes in the soil than will do just growing the cover crop.
Yes. And so getting it young, too, because that sun hemp is very fibrous and can be difficult to work with as it approaches flowering.
Yeah, so at early flowering stage, we tested that it will be the best time to incorporate cover crop, the sun hemp, but not after when it try to seed and become very fibrous.
And what is the best method for the incorporation that you've seen done? Is it a tractor with some sort of implement on it, or?
Yeah, you could use regular a plow or tiller to incorporate material into the soil. But the other aspect of growing sun hemp as a cover crop is also for soil health management. It is a leguminous cover crop. It generates lots of nitrogen in the leaves, and when incorporated into the soil, it can be a nitrogen input to the soil. So we tend to recommend farmers to do a strip-till cover cropping system. So you can leave some of the material not tilled so you don't disturb the soil too much, but just use a narrower tiller to strip in the planting row that you want to plant your cash crop that are susceptible to nematodes.
Mm-hmm.
So any tiller will work.
We know that sun hemp is only one of the crotalarias, and there are many naturalized species here in Hawaii, and we have a common one that has a much broader leaf to it that comes up as a weed. Is that one also effective?
Oh, so you're talking about Crotalaria spectabilis, and we also have Crotalaria robusta. So some of these actually grow more like a weed. We had compared sun hemp or Crotalaria gentia, which is the one we recommend for use in nematode control and as a cover crop. And we compare it to Retusa and also Spectabilis. Their toxicity is not as high as sun hemp. The other concern of using those weedy Crotalaria species is that their toxicity can be harmful to animals. So if you have animal in your farm that accidentally feed on the other type of Crotalaria species, it might be poisonous to your animals. But Tropic Sun Sun Hemp is tested to be free of the toxicity to the animals.
Excellent. Thank you.
So let's move on to another nematode-controlling species, or at least group of plants. And I know that some people here on Hawaii use sun hemp in combination with sudex or Sudan grass.
Right.
And that's something that I've tried before and seems to be a good pairing of plants. And that's also one that reduces nematode populations, yes?
Yes. So sorghum or sorghum Sudan grass is released another compound. It's called dehurin from the roots as well as from the leaves. So you could grow them when the nematode are reproducing, and then when you incorporate it into the soil, again, it's act like sun hemp. It will release its toxicity. It is a graminaceous crop, very different from sun hemp. And if you hear from our NRCS agents talking about soil health management, they will recommend you to mix different type of cover crop, especially when you mix legume type of cover crop like sun hemp with the sorghum type of cover crop, which is a graminaceous cover crop. Well, graminaceous cover crop has high carbon content, so you can add big amount of organic matter into the soil, whereas sun hemp are mainly adding nitrogen to the soil. So the benefits of mixing them together would be, one, you can increase the organic matter, and the other one can release nitrogen in the soil, but both of them can be suppressive to plant parasitic nematodes.
Can you tell us what effect marigolds, how effective marigolds have been for you? Have you done any research with that?
Yeah, we tested two very different species of marigold. One type of marigold is called Targetes erecta, which is more commonly known as African marigold. They have big flowers, and they tend to produce lots of biomass. With the other one is called Targetes patula, which we commonly call it a French marigold. And both of them release alpha-turtinol from the root system, but it's toxic to the nematode when they are growing, so they release the toxicity from their root system. So it's not like you can grow your marigold somewhere else and move the biomass over to the field you want to grow your cash crop to suppress the nematode. You have to grow your marigold in the field where you want to suppress your nematode. One different thing between the Targetes patula and Targetes erecta is that Targetes erecta actually hosts for another very bad plant parasitic nematode known as reniform nematodes. So they can reproduce big time in the Targetes erecta. So if you know your field has reniform nematodes, then you probably don't want to grow the African marigold or the Targetes erecta. You should use the Targetes patula or the French marigold because it's known to be poor host for root knot as well as reniform nematodes. So knowing what nematode in your soil is important when you are selecting marigold variety.
And how would we know that? We'd get a soil test with you probably, yes?
Yeah, you can submit soil sample to your local extension agent, and they will send it to CITA Diagnostic Lab to test it out for you.
I want to let people know that this is In the Garden on the Farm. We're talking to Dr. Kunhui Wang from the University of Hawaii. She's a nematode specialist and finding all kinds of sustainable ways that we can control the pests in our soil rather than using the dangerous chemicals that are often used by industrial farming. And I'm wondering if you could mention briefly about the chemical solutions that farmers are using and what sort of risks do they really present to our ecology in the soil that we would like to enhance rather than kill off.
So most of the big fields that have having reniform or plant parasitic nematode problem, they tend to like to fumigate the soil with fumigants. For example, 1,3-D or Talon is one commonly used, but this chemical is quite toxic. You need to have a pesticide license to apply the chemical. One disadvantage of having Talon or other type of soil fumigant is that they are not just nematicide, they act more like a biocide, so it has some effect against other soil-borne pathogens as well, but oftentimes it also affects other beneficial organisms in the soil. So lots of soil organisms are actually soil nutrients recycler in the soil. So if we are killing them, so that means any organic material you add in the soil will take longer time to decompose. So not very good for organic farming system.
Well, we're so grateful that you are giving us solutions through your research. Really fun to look at all the different collaborations that you're doing and creative ways of solving our pest and disease problems. And on that note, we today on In the Garden on the Farm, we're going to be talking about solarization. And it's funny because Robin and I made up the schedule for the show and come to find out that you're one of the leading experts in Hawaii through your research on solarization, or at least I would label you as such after looking at the literature that you've produced. So I'm grateful that we've got you now, and hopefully you can introduce us to this concept of solarization and explain why it works so well and what people can expect from taking that practice on.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. So soil solarization is basically you have to use a transparent plastic mulch, and it need to be very thin, not regular construction plastic mulch will do. So it has to be about 1 mil thick, no more than 1 mil thick, and preferably you will use a plastic that has UV protection function so that it can last in a field for a longer time before it's breaking down by the sun. So tarping the soil for 4 to 6 weeks is a regular practice for farmers that use solarization for nematode or even weed control. We found that in Hawaii, it's especially challenging even though we have lots of time period throughout the years that can be trapping heat, but our soil tends to have high clay content, which means that the heat doesn't go too deep down into the soil. So basically, you only heat up the soil in the top 4 inches layer, and nematode can be hiding deeper down into the soil. So you have to integrate solarization with some other method of nematode control to get effective management practice for nematodes. But we did find that using solarization for weed control is actually quite effective, especially if your field are not loaded with nutsedge type of weeds, because they tend to poke hole in a solarization mulch and will not allow the heat to be trapped efficiently.
Well, we sure have that issue here on Kauai. It seems like there are very few places people grow where we don't have that nutsedge present either in the soil, and of course sometimes it gets spread around when people get green waste compost and other sources of soil amendments. Sometimes it comes with those nuts in it. So yeah, it's quite a painstaking process to get them out, especially in a large area. I suppose it would be unfeasible, but our intensive organic farmers go to the process of pulling each and every piece out, and I'm happy to say that our garden beds up at the community garden on the north shore of Kauai are pretty much nutsedge free after maybe 3 or 4 rounds of intensive picking them out of the soil. However, we do have the nematodes, so that would be a good candidate for us with our garden beds. But I'm wondering about bringing that garden or any crop area out of production during what seems like a really important part of the growing cycle here, the spring and summer in Hawaii. Any place that we would like to do solarization, we're pretty much sacrificing that part of the growing season so that we can do the solarization. It's only 6 weeks, but is that a consideration that you think makes people avoid that practice to some extent?
Yes. There are several reasons why solarization are not commonly practiced here, besides the high clay soil content I mentioned to you, unavailability of the solarization mulch from our local distributor also stopped them from buying big quantities from the mainland. And the other reason is that even though we are in tropical area, but solarization is only effective during April to October season, which is our very good growing season. if you do solarization during from November to March, it actually doesn't heat up the soil enough to kill nematodes. So there are several concerns to think about. But if the field is already too loaded with nematode pests or weed problem and your field is not productive, sometimes it's good to let your soil go to rest for a while you're using other soil.
Sure, and it works quite well with the ginger timing because ginger kind of heads if you can pull it off the summer before your great ginger crop, that might work out to be pretty decent timing.
Yeah. So for ginger, there are many other practices that farmers should watch out for besides using cover crop and also potentially solarization. Some practice in a Hilo USDA researcher that recently retired, Dr. Francis G. from Hilo, have been giving away clean ginger planting rhizome material through tissue culture and then follow up by a hydroponic system. So it's very important to plant with clean rhizome that is free of nematodes as well as other bacteria that are commonly infecting the ginger root pieces. So it's important to start with clean planting material when we are dealing with root crops such as ginger and turmeric.
Indeed. And is that damage not visible to the naked eye? So if I was looking at a planting piece that I picked up from a farmer's market, let's say, could it have the nematode infestation and I don't visibly see any pitting or galling to the rhizome?
You can see some pitting if it's lesion nematodes or burrowing nematodes. They can cause lesion on the rhizome. But for root knot nematode, it tends to stay on the fine root system, which you will see swallowing on the root system easily. So farmers can easily recognize a rhizome that has root knot nematode infection if you have the root pieces, the fine root system associated with it. But they won't form galls on the rhizome.
One last thing on the solarization, Dr. Wang, is that in your papers you mentioned that the clear plastic sheeting that people will often see at the hardware store or maybe a home supply store is not effective because it's too thick.
Right.
And so is it, and you mentioned that it's difficult now to find it in Hawaii, the supplier doesn't carry it anymore?
Yeah, you can ask some local distributor like PEI or Wisdom Industry. They can order in big bulk from the mainland and ship it in. But if farmers work together, they can all share the big order so that it's more available. And I think the biggest problem would be if there are not enough farmers supporting to buy it, then the distributor tends not to bring it in. But if the distributor know that farmers are interested in it, then they will be more likely to distribute it locally.
Does solarization also harm some of the other microbiology in those top 4 inches of soil? And if so, what's a great strategy for rebuilding them after?
Okay. So, yeah, solarization does kill other beneficial organisms in the soil that are not tolerant to high heat. So normally solarization, you want it to reach about 117 to 122 Fahrenheit to kill nematode efficiently. And so oftentimes you will suppress beneficial nematodes in the soil as well as beneficial fungi and bacteria. But we found that it doesn't kill the microorganism on the topsoil layer for too long because, as we mentioned, it only kills the topsoil layer and the microorganism under the top 4 inches of soil can recolonize the system within 1 month after the solarization mulch is removed. And we also found that one very good fungal biocontrol agent, which is known as Trichoderma, as well as the other one is called Pestillomycete, it tends to be very tolerant to high heat. And so if the other fungus got killed, they are the first one to colonize, and they have some toxicity against loss of soil-borne pathogens.
So the grand design of nature comes through again to save the day. I appreciate that. So, are you are with us. Dr. Kunhui Wang, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you as our guest today. Thank you so much for sharing about your research and your experience with crop production and sustainable pest control. And we are very hopeful that you'll join us for a future show to talk more about your exciting work.
It's a pleasure to talking with you.
Thanks for your work. Thanks for helping us grow organically here in Hawaii.
If people are interested in being in touch, would you like to share a contact?
Sure. I can be reached at my email, koonhui@hawaii.edu.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Aloha.
So I just want to get the ball rolling, and I want to say that was such a great conversation with Kunhui. We're so lucky to have researchers like her working at the university who are just completely focused on organic control, because methyl bromide is one of the most commonly used fumigants also, and was the standard to compare methods of pest, disease, and weed control, because it was considered the most effective management tool. But look at how far we have come, that we find new ideas on how, with young, brilliant minds, new ideas on how to grow food without chemicals and poisons. And so I'm just really proud, and I know that we're continually evolving beautifully now in a more peaceful way in the way that we like to grow food.
I couldn't agree more, Robin. It's great to see the researchers and some good funding going behind the kind of investigations in the field and in the lab that we want to see, that takes care of the soil, takes care of our health and the health of our beautiful island and our beautiful planet.
Indeed, just that our researchers are working hand in hand with the farmers who are producing these cash crops.
Truly.
It's just wonderful.
Truly indeed.
So I'd like to make some announcements right now. First one is Go Farm Hawaii at the Kauai Community College. There's three segments to the course. The first one is for ag curious people called Farm Dreams. That one will be held on Tuesday, February 4th at 5:30 p.m. at the Kauai Community College OSET building, room 106 C and D. Are you interested in farming? Looking for a career or an opportunity to earn supplemental income farming sustainably? Well, if you are, come hear successful Kauai farmers talk story about their startup experiences, challenges, benefits, and lifestyles. The class is free. And again, it's on Tuesday, February 4th at 5:30 p.m. That sounds great. The second segment of that class is going to be Ag Exposure, and that will take place from February 22nd to March 29th on Saturdays or Sundays to be announced. Farm tours and hands-on learning experiences on sustainable farms. Sounds great, too. And then the third segment of this Go Farm Hawaii course is going to be Ag School, and that'll take place from April 17th to August 2nd. So you'll have a nice summer of gardening experience there, farming experience rather. Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. That'll be also at the Kauai Community College, hands-on, comprehensive education in all aspects of business and science of sustainable farming on Kauai. Come hear successful Kauai farmers talk story about their startup experiences, challenges, benefits, and lifestyles. Deep discounted price. We really want people out there. Call 245-8318 to register. Or for more information, you can check out www.gofarmhawaii.org. Next up in announcements is the Kauai Gathering of the Realms, Saturday and Sunday, February 8th and 9th. Mark your calendars. It'll be held at the Taro Patch in Anahola, and we are gathering as ambassadors of humanity to the Deva and nature spirit realms. Through meditation, ceremony, sound, and dance, we will thin the veils to communicate with the beings of earth, air, fire, and water. Nature lovers, elders, inspired presenters, and those curious to deepen their connection to nature beings and Gaia are welcome. For more information, check out gatheringoftherealms.com. Next up is a Kauai Permaculture Design Course. From February 22nd to March 9th, it will be held in Moloa'a. It will be a two-week permaculture design intensive. Includes camping, meals, instructional materials. Participants completing the course will receive a permaculture design certificate. For more information, please visit permaculturekauai.com. That's the one that lots of people have been asking about recently. So that permaculture design course, again, taking place February 22nd to March 9th in Moloa'a. And you can get more information at permaculturekauai.com. If you, as our listener, have an event or announcement or a question, you can feel free to email us at inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. If you have an event, we'd love it. It would make it much easier for us if you gave it to us about 2 weeks in advance, so we have some time to prepare it. And we appreciate your feedback very much. Thanks. Please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy from 1 to 3. This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd like to thank our guest on the show today, Dr. Khun Huy Wang, and you can reach her if you have any questions about her work at khunhui@hawaii.edu. That's khunhui@hawaii.edu. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.